Welcome to Level with Emily Reese. This is music from a new Sonic remix album called Mobius to celebrate Sonic's 25th anniversary. Composer Stephen Froberg wrote this track, and he'll join us later in the show to talk more about producing this massive project. And composer professor Troy Strand talks about his favorite week of the year, which happens to be during the camp he runs at MacPhail Center for Music. It's called Composing for Video Games. First, our patron of the week is Jordan Pollen, who just got his master's degree in public health, so congrats on that. He's hilarious too. He's been cracking me up on Twitter for years. His favorite video game music includes a track from Botanicula and one from the Freedom Cry DLC to Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag, which is where we start. Well, let's go ahead and talk about your awesome list. I mean, I obviously, with every single person, wish I could talk about every track they chose, but you had quite a list that makes me realize that you're an Assassin's Creed fan, for one.
I saw that. I tried to add a couple other ones, but still, I think almost 40% or something of my list is Assassin's Creed.
But what I love about it is that it's from all sorts of different composers in Assassin's Creed. There's a Olivier Deriviere track. That's the one we're going to talk about. There's a track from Assassin's Creed 3, which I think was Lorne Balfe. And then there's a Jesper Kidd track. So it's like this history of the Assassin's Creed composers in your list, which is really, really cool. But the DLC for Black Flag, which was called Freedom Cry, so it was Assassin's Creed 4, Black Flag, Freedom Cry.
Yeah.
Amazing soundtrack by a French dude, right? Who looked into all this Haitian music. So let's talk about the first track from that, which is called The Root. Go ahead and tell me what you love about that.
Some of it I know because you spoken to him, so I know about the background of some of it. But if you just listen and you didn't know anything, you close your eyes, you can feel everything that the game is trying to say, and the music says that perfectly on its own. Like, if you just listen to that by itself, you get a whole story of what's happening. You can hear the singer. Everything comes together to make it tells a full story, even with just that song. And then the whole soundtrack is full of songs like that. The Haitian music, the African influence, is not something that you typically get in games at all. So it's just from that, it just sounds completely different from anything that you would normally hear. And I love Olivier Deriviere, and I've seen a couple interviews with him where he's talked about how unlucky he's been, and it's the same feeling I have. I don't know why, but for whatever reason, he always happens to get with projects that don't get as much attention as they should.
Yeah.
And because I think he should be one of the just top composers, just in general, regardless of genre or games or music, whatever. I heard a few soundtracks from games that I didn't even play from years ago. I think it was something called Obscure. It was some game back in the PS2 days, and that's where I first heard about him. And I played Remember Me, I played Freedom Cry, and I just love everything he puts out. And this was probably one of my favorite things I've heard from him, and one of the favorite things I've heard from the series, even though I'm a huge fan of Jesper Kidd, and I didn't think after Assassin's Creed 2 that he could be topped. Mm-hmm. And this came as close as it could, and I still listen to the soundtrack all the time. I said something on Facebook to you about how amazing it was when I listened to it. Yeah. That's how surprised I was at how good it turned out to be, because I think I played the DLC late. It was like months after it came out. And I got it just because I'm a fan of the series, and I was really interested in that story, but I wasn't expecting the music to be as good as it was. And then when I found out he was doing the music, I was less surprised. But I just loved the African influence and how it just didn't sound like what you typically hear from even Assassin's Creed games, even though they've had a bunch of different composers and settings, that one stood out.
Yes, it was original with a capital O.
Yeah.
Well, but so is the music from Botanicula, and that music is so frickin' happy. So tell me about that game and that music.
Well, so this one is kind of harder because I didn't actually play Botanicula. I just heard this song. It was on like a year in wrap up from something of different game music that people liked.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard this song and I loved it. And it's just been something that I've been playing since I heard it. I don't know when the game came out in 2012. So yeah, it's been years and I still come back to the song and still listen to it. And like you said, it does remind me of the Rayman games, which have also had similar kind of music. There's a podcast called The White Light Mixes.
Okay.
And it's a bunch of DJs who the theme is to make a set where it's the feeling when you're driving down a highway.
Mm-hmm.
You just have the street lights in your eye and you're just out going for a drive at night.
Yeah.
I've tried to make my own similar mixes and this song would be on there. It's just something I can put on in the background and I can listen to it and it just fits for me. It might be different for other people, but for me, this is the kind of song I could listen to while I'm just going out at night for a drive.
Jordan's other choices were Flame Rock Refuge from Borderlands 2 by Rayson Varner, Fight Club from Assassin's Creed 3 by Lauren Balfe, Ezio's Family from Assassin's Creed 2 by Jesper Kidd, New Worlds from Mass Effect 2 by Jack Wall, and When the Wind Blows from Rayman Legends by Christophe Erol. You can learn more about becoming a patron of the week at patreon.com/level. Composer Troy Strand runs a camp each summer for kids called Composing for Video Games. I got to hang out for one of the concerts last week, and I could not believe how well those students did in such a short amount of time. The majority of the music you'll hear comes from their work last week. Coincidentally, Troy also contributed music to Mobius, the Sonic remix album you'll hear about later in the show, so you're going to get to hear Troy's remix of Flying Battery Zone.
So the camp was at McPhail Center for Music, and it was called Composing for Video Games Camp, and this is our sixth year of the camp. Students ages 11 through 18 get together in the morning or the afternoon, and they create original video game compositions using the digital audio workstation Reason.
So how do they pick games? How does that happen?
In the years past, we've done a variety of different kind of strategies for choosing games. Sometimes they chose games that were kind of in their imaginations. Sometimes they chose games that already existed. We've done games with local developers where they've allowed us to kind of replace the music in their games, and so they've given the files to the students to take home and change. This year we decided to do a mix of imagined games and games that are currently being developed. So we found some games in TIG Source, which is the independent game source. That's a series of forums and devlogs that the developers can share their progress. And so some of our students chose music four games that are already in development.
Tell me a little bit about the students you had this year. So you have two separate classes, as you said. You have a morning session and an afternoon session. So how does that break down?
We had a mix of students in each group. We had an 11-year-old all the way up to 17-year-olds in the morning camp. And it was just really neat to see the older students kind of mentor the younger students. But as a reverse, some of our younger students have had piano lessons at McPhail for years and years. And so they know a lot of these musical concepts that the older students who are just kind of starting on a composition weren't as accustomed to. So we had one student in particular named Josiah, who is just like the sweetest kid, super smiley all the time, just making jokes and making conversation. And then he comes up with this super creepy music using Twinkle Twinkle Little Star as like a basis for like a child's nightmare video game that he found on TIG Source.
I got to go to see it Friday, and I saw one of the concerts, which was absolutely a wonderful experience. And after that, you and I talked, and you said that this was your favorite year. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, the kids just get more and more comfortable with the software. This year, we had a couple of students who had previously done the camp before, and so they were able to be resources to the other students. But my own familiarity with the software helps me help the students more. But it just kind of clicked this year. We had exactly six students in each session, which is the number of workstations that we have for our students. And using TIG Source as a way to springboard their creativity and get them focused right away on a scene complete with like a design document and pictures of the gameplay really helped them hone in their musical ideas right away.
And you had a student who was also making his own game and writing music for his own game, right?
Yeah, that's become more and more common as I've done this camp. The first year, there was not a single student who was talking about creating their own game. And this year, there were at least four who were making games in Unity or Unreal Engine or RPG Maker. And it's really neat to see that either they've got a game idea or they've actually started to create a game on their own.
Thank you.
The most rewarding thing for me this week was mentoring the student named Diego. He was in our morning camp, and he was working on a game called Cat Quest, which is currently in development. He found the game on TIGSource, and it's just the cutest little cat in armor swinging a sword RPG. And he reached out to the developers to say, hey, your game looks really cool. I'm in this camp in Minneapolis, and I want to make some music for your game. You don't have to use it in your game necessarily, but I just want to let you know that I'm, you know, using this for a creative exercise. Mm-hmm. And they said, well, we've already got like an overworld theme song, but we don't have anything for this cave part that you wrote music for. So if you make a couple of changes, we'd love to put it into the game. So we've got a student who lives in Maple Grove who's going to be making some music at the age of, I think he's 15, for a group from Singapore in a game that's going to be coming out, I think, this year.
And what are you personally working on right now?
I just finished up a track for the latest Materia Collective album, the Mobius Sonic the Hedgehog remixed. I did a track from Sonic & Knuckles called Flying Battery Zone. A couple more projects with that group that I've got in production. Working on two local games. One is called Verdant Skies, being developed by Beth and Andy Korth. And they're local game developers, which is kind of a farm life simulator. It's set in space.
Nice. Which is
looking really cool with a lot of beautiful hand-drawn 2D art. Another game I'm working on is called Burn the World, which was started as an educational game at an event called Startup Weekend EDU, which is an ed tech startup weekend, kind of a game jam, but for education technology. And Nick Van Meerten and Matt Gravel formed a team at this event that I also attended and decided to make a game where you learn about global warming by destroying the world. It's kind of a cookie clicker style idle game, but it uses real world mathematics to determine how much the global temperature would rise if this many fossil fuels were consumed in this amount of time. So I'm working on a very dark kind of bleak electronic industrial track for that.
Awesome. Well, I always wish you the best of luck, Troy. I think you're the best, and just really glad that you do this camp for kids. What an amazing resource.
Oh, well, thank you, Emily. It's like you said, it's my favorite week of the year.
You can learn more about Troy and his composing for video games camp at patreon.com/level. Stephen Frober just finished producing a giant 4-CD set full of Sonic remixes to celebrate Sonic's 25th anniversary this year. Stephen is part of a group of game composers called the Materia Collective, and we've featured them on Level before for one of their Final Fantasy projects. For this Sonic project, there are 58 tracks with more than 50 arrangers.
Sonic has always been a huge part of my musical journey. I grew up on it, grew up on the soundtrack, and that was actually one of my first sort of rock pop influences was, no kidding, Sonic the Hedgehog soundtracks. And so, you know, it was really important and meaningful to me. And I played all the way up from the very first game up to like Sonic Adventure, kind of in the Dreamcast era. And after that, I kind of grew out of it. But then now I've got three kids. And so, you know, and all the Sega games are being re-released on iPhone. And so I've been getting them into Sonic and they like it. And so as part of the Materia Collective with Sebastian Wolf, he was the founder of that. And we did Final Fantasy VII and VIII last year. And so we've been looking ahead at kind of game titles that we'd like to do renditions of. And I immediately thought of Sonic because of how important that was to my musical journey. And so I went and looked up the next anniversary of what it was going to be. And it was like, oh, 25th anniversary. That's perfect. You know, that's a, that's a big year. So we kind of threw down quickly and got a group of people together. My assistant producer, John Montoya, he jumped in too. And we both started getting people interested. And everybody was like, yes, let's do it. And they were super excited. So there was a lot of energy around it. And I think we started, got the official word for the soundtrack or for the remix album in January. And so kind of late January. And then we went from February until June, making all the tracks happen.
So how many artists did you end up working with?
Arranger-wise, I think we had like 52 or 53 arrangers, and then we had over 80 musicians total working on the project when we tallied it up.
And how many tracks at the end?
58 tracks. So it is a good smattering of the different eras of Sonic. And I think we got several of the games. I think we only missed like a couple of the more obscure titles, but we caught several of the obscure ones, not all of them, but got a good smattering of representative titles.
It's such popular music and it's so, so good. Were there any, I don't want to say fights over who got to arrange what or who got to cover what, but
yeah.
was it tough to sort out who got to do what?
Yeah, it was. And we did have no fights. Everybody was, you know, really willing to work with each other, but there was some definite discussions about like, man, I really wanted, so we had a lot of competition for like Green Hill Zone from the first game. Starlight Zone came up several times. And so initially our thoughts were like, hey, this is going to be a smaller album, so let's not have too many duplicate tracks. Then when we got in all the submissions and started seeing everything, it was like, oh wow, this is actually going to be quite large. So, and then we saw what people's pitch was for what they wanted to do with that track, how they were going to remix it. And some of them were drastically different, even though they were the same song.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was like, hey, as long as it's uniquely different from the other track, we just don't want two versions that are very, very similar. And so we kind of loosened up a little bit on those. But yeah, we do have a couple of renditions of the big hard-hitting tracks that everybody loves within the Sonic universe.
So what were some of the surprises for you? I mean, I'm sure in some way, shape, or form they all were, but just some that just kind of blew your mind.
Oh, yeah. Well, so we got, I mean, it's, man, every track is really, really good. So it's hard to narrow down, but I'm just going to kind of go off the cuff here and talk about a few. So one that came in that was just, it sort of set the tone when I first heard it. Amidst all the others, it was like, oh, wow, we've got a really cool, high-quality album here. And that was when Videri String Quartet came in, and they did their version of Green Hill Zone. It's a beautiful arrangement, you know, with a lot of accoutrements in the music that sound very good. And then at the very end, I listened to the track, right? And it sounds like a studio recording. Very good. And at the end, I hear audience applause. And it's like, oh my God, that was live. What is going on right now? And so it was really good. And I talked to Rosie Samter. She's with Videri. And so I chatted with her and she was like, yeah, no, it was a live recording. And I was like, whoa. Daniel Woodyer, he's one of our guitar players that's in the collective. He goes by Pirate Crab on the album. He did a rendition of Hydro City Zone from Sonic the Hedgehog 3. And he did this sort of like funk metal cover of it that is just unbelievable. Just, you know, crazy kind of John Petrucci riffs all throughout, just going nuts. Great guitar solos and a really cool rendition of it. And that ended up being the album opener after the Sega theme. And that one was just outstanding. I was impressed with what everybody did across the board. But yeah, those were two standouts.
And especially to come together with it so quickly, it seems like everybody just really kind of focused and got the job done.
Yeah, definitely. It was. It's inspiring to see everybody come together like that because you got people from all over the world, all age ranges. Like, so the youngest person on the album is 16 years old and he pumped out an amazing track. Charles Ritz is his name. He's track 6 on the first disc and then he's got 2 tracks on the second disc. Dude's 16 years old and pumping out these high quality, awesome jazz tracks. And it was just super cool. And like, when you think about that for me, you know, like that is exactly half my age. It was just one of those moments where it's like, whoa, like I'm producing an album because Sonic meant a lot to me. And we have a guy that's half my age that it means a lot to him. And he's doing high quality tracks. Like, I think I was still like turning up the distortion to 10 on my electric guitar and garage band at that point. So.
Well, Stephen, of course, you were several months ago now, or several weeks ago now, you were one of our very first Patron of the Week interviews. And, you know, one of the tracks we talked about was Sonic.
Yes.
And what's funny is that on the list that you sent me, that was the very first one. You're like, number one, yep. Sonic.
Yeah.
Yep. And so I just can't imagine that many more fitting people to head this project than you.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, no, and it means a lot to me. So in a lot of ways, this has been interesting. I'm a composer for games, you know, and I've been doing mostly mobile titles and things like that. And that's kind of where my main focus is. And then I sort of found myself in this remix scene working with Sebastian and Materia Collective. And I've really enjoyed myself. It's really been super fun. And I've gotten to revisit a lot of games that were meaningful along the way in my musical and gaming journey. So, you know, again, we did Final Fantasies and stuff like that. And then now Sonic is happening. And so it's kind of neat that I'm getting this season where I get to revisit influences and sort of do my take on them. And I feel like that's, I don't know, I feel like there's a bit of catharsis there, you know, that like this is closing a chapter that I've gotten to revisit these things that I was passionate about at that time. And then now as a composer myself, I'm sort of launching now into my own career as well and getting to pay homage to these things, you know, which is really cool. We'll be right back.
So how can people find where to get this?
We are on Louder. That's the kind of main site that we are distributing through, but it's also in iTunes, it's in Spotify, Amazon, all of the major digital stores. It is available today. So you can stream if you're into streaming, or if you want to support us directly, Louder is kind of the best platform to do that through. Louder works with us directly. They're the ones who does the licensing to get the covers approved, and the kind of most money goes to, after the original money goes to the composer, you know, that we benefit the most from the Louder purchase.
Were there any issues with copyright or anything, licensing, anything like that? Or was it pretty cut and dry?
This one was pretty cut and dry. So the always interesting one, and there's a lot of lore surrounding the Sonic 3 and Knuckles back in 1994. In the Sonic fandom, there's a lot of debate and discussion. And it was finally confirmed, I think, like a year ago, of whether or not Michael Jackson was a part of the album. So for licensing purposes, and I think one of the developers actually came out and said, yes, he did come to Sega during that time, and there were some tracks that he worked on, and some of those things made it into the game. So, you know, that was cool, and everybody kind of flipped out.
Sure.
But those tracks, when they're licensed, they just get licensed generically to Sega. So there's like 6 composers, I think, listed on Sonic 3, and we don't know which track goes to which composer.
Okay.
And so
okay,
that's kind of funny. But yeah, no, there were no major issues on this one. The ones where it really comes into play is with Nintendo. For some reason, they're challenging. There was one track and one scenario that sort of brought us all together of like why we're doing this in sort of a bigger picture way. And that one, it's on the end of disc 2, track 17 on the end of disc 2. And the track is Dreams of Absolution. It's by Lauren the Flute. She's a YouTuber and Twitch streamer. Mm-hmm. She did this beautiful all flute rendition of Dreams of Absolution. And so the background story there was we were about a month into the project. And she contacted me and said that the mother of one of her fans had written her a message saying, you know, my daughter is sick, but she used to play the flute quite a bit. She loves Sonic the Hedgehog. Would you be willing to do a cover of this song for her because she looks up to you a lot? And so she said, yeah, of course, you know, we'll do that. And so she started working, and the mom kind of said, like, you know, hey, she's really ill, and I think this would make her happy. And so we worked really hard, you know, got the track finished. A couple of people really helped Lauren get the track done. And she was able to get the track to her in time, which was super meaningful, but also very, very difficult because, you know, she ended up not making it. And it was one of those moments where, okay, yeah, we're covering video game music and it's Sonic the Hedgehog. But at the same time, this is part of our story. This is part of our life. You know, like when you remember people, when people are big fans of a franchise like this, Star Wars or anything, and that's what you remember them by. It just takes the music production and, you know, just making music for fun and puts it into a new stratosphere. You know, and our thoughts are with the family, of course, in a difficult time, but it's sobering just to think about the fact that we were a part of that journey in some tiny fraction of a way.
Well, tell us about your tracks.
So the first one, I got a chance to work with the amazing Elizabeth Zaroff. She is a classically trained opera singer.
She's amazing.
She's awesome. She's so cool. Wonderful person and amazing musician, wonderful at editing. And her forte is vocals. Like she does vocals like you wouldn't believe. Like she's who I trust to do that. So I did an arrangement of the Sega theme, which isn't too hard. It's just two notes, basically. But the original was like very logo-y. You know, it was like two major chords, just Sega.
Sega!
Yeah. I wanted to add just a tinge of drama to it. So I changed the chord up on the first Sega note so that it's like a minor 7 flat 5, really kind of tense
nice
chord. And then it resolves into this big major choir.
Sega!
So she did all of the vocal editing on that track, and it turned out beautifully. It was really cool.
Nice.
So that was the first one. Track 13 on disc one, I did a song called Visions of Flame and Frost, and it is a mashup remix of Ice Cap Zone from Sonic 3 and Lava Reef Zone from Sonic & Knuckles. There's been a bunch of covers of Ice Cap over the years. A lot of people do it, and all very good covers. And typically they fall kind of into either like techno or metal for the remix of that song. So what I decided to do was sort of take it in this, I jokingly call it like post-prog dreamcore. So it's very moody and ethereal. And I got Laura Platt to play piano on it for me, and she did an outstanding job. And so it's got this very eclectic, sort of dreamy post-rock kind of vibe to it. It's pretty interesting. I was really pleased with how it came out. Final one was from Sonic CD. It's on disc two. I did Quartz Quadrant Present from the Japanese version of the Sonic CD soundtrack. My title for it was Making Sweet Chords in the Quadrant. And so it's kind of this funky, swanky kind of groove going on. And then I had Jordan Chin play the guitar solo in the bridge. Cool. And it's really got this swagger kind of vibe to it. But it was one of my favorite tracks from that game. It's just really cool. It's got a very like J-pop-y chord progression to it, you know, like an anime intro or something. I just loved it, so. You know, it's just interesting because wearing the producer hat, there's a part of me that's like a fan of everybody else too. And it's like, man, I want everybody to hear everybody's track, you know, which is because everybody did really good work, and I'm proud of what everybody put into it.
Well, thanks so much, Stephen. It's really nice to chat with you again.
Yeah, you too. Thank you so much. And I appreciate what you do. The show is so awesome. I always tune in. I love all the people that you get on and how you really go through and are a fan of the music that's being produced. It's really cool to geek out about because, you know, so few people take the time to geek out about good music.
You can learn more about Stephen Froeber and the Materia Collective at patreon.com/level. And you can get your own copy of Mobius at louder.fm, which is louder.fm. Thanks for listening to episode 29 of Level with Emily Rees. You'll find out more information about all our guests and how to become a patron of the week online at patreon.com/level. I'm Emily Rees. Sam Keenan is our producer. Say hi, Sam.
Your soul shall be mine.
Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Level with Emily. And you can learn more about Sam and me at june-media.com. Don't forget, June is J-O-O-N.